Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope. Welcome back to Anthologies of Hope, and thank you for joining us to kick off Season 3. It's incredible that we released our first episode almost 11 months ago to the day, and to see the growth in community that our stories have shared and have garnered, we cannot be more grateful. As always, I'm your host, Rick Osowski, and I'm not a mental health professional, in any way, simply a mental health advocate with a passion for storytelling. This week marks the start of the next 10 weeks of weekly Wednesday episodes of long-form sit-down interviews discussing the impact and importance of mental health, suicide, and suicide prevention with some great guests that we have met in just those past 11 months. Additionally, we'll have bonus content coming to you every Friday as well. These will include our traditional Conversations Cafe events recorded live at Sip of Hope Coffee Bar, as well as three Conversations Cafe events that were hosted on the main stage of Hope for the Day's Conversation Summit, September 7th, 2019. The first of which will be coming to you this Friday, that's right, in just 2 days. We'll be bringing you the Boys Don't Cry panel with a lineup of guests you will not want to miss, including both professional musicians and professional athletes taking the stage to break the stigma around talking about their mental health throughout their careers. Additionally, we'll also have some new Mental Health Minute episodes hitting the airwaves on a few Fridays in November. These will cover some practical tips on how you can approach your mental health care, hot off the presses, direct from published research, but broken down into conversational and actionable approaches. We're going to start with two separate episodes focusing on skills and techniques for anxiety and depression. Depending on how these episodes go and we get response from our listeners, we'll follow up with additional Mental Health Minute episodes as well, focusing on a wider range of mental health practices that are often researched and documented, but don't always make it to the front lines where that information is needed most, both your head and your heart. Now, on with the show. This week's guest, our first of Season 3, is someone whom I wanted to have on the show from the first night I met him last November at the inaugural Conversations Cafe. Joel Frieders is a man of many talents, as you will hear throughout the episode, but most of all, he exudes charisma and his passion for suicide prevention and mental health advocacy burns deep and very, very bright. We covered Joel's experience as an alderman for the United City of Yorkville, Illinois, his journey to becoming the public policy director for Hope for the Day, and how it is he can manage such a hectic schedule on top of both of these roles. Joel's main passion project is the National Suicide Prevention and Action Month Proclamation, or as you'll hear Joel call it, NSPAMP. After painfully losing multiple friends and loved ones and mentors to suicide, Joel decided it was time something had to be done to break the silence and the stigma surrounding talking about suicide and the impact it has on our communities. You will hear Joel describe all the blood, sweat, tears, and elbow grease he has put into cold calling a ridiculous amount of municipalities across the country. It's in the thousands. But even more surprisingly, the excellent uptake he has received as part of NSPAMP since its creation in 2017. I'll let Joel handle most of the details for the proclamation, but I want to bring you the three foundational elements that closely align with the foundation of Anthologies of Hope very well. One, suicide is a problem. Two, there are resources available to help. And three, your humanity is important. Or more simply, you are enough. Listen to Joel talk about the National Suicide Prevention Action Month Proclamation, and then check out facebook.com/nspamp, that's N-S-P-A-M-P, for more details. You can also check out more background info, related articles, and all of Joel's contact information on his guest page at the website, anthologiesofhope.com/guest/Joel-Frieders. Of course, as it is a new season, we will be starting a new Spotify playlist to join with all of our long-form interviews. You can go check it out right now at anthologiesofhope.com/playlist, and it has all the songs associated with the first half of Season 3 right now. You can still find Season 1 at anthologiesofhope.com/season-1-playlist and Season 2 at anthologiesofhope.com/season-2-playlist. I'm not going to go into detail on my or Joel's selections this week, as the passion Joel speaks with his musical selections is nothing I could hold a candle to during this intro, so I'll let Joel take it from there. Every week, we'd like to remind you that if you're in a time of crisis, we'll be covering a range of potentially difficult topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and come back to listen once you are in a more positive season. If you are in need of help, an abundance of international resources can be found on the Find Help pages from Hope for the Day and To Write Love in Our Arms. Hope for the Day can be found at hftd.org/find-help, and To Write Love in Our Arms can be found at twloha.com/find-help. As always, you can find us at anthologiesofhope.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Anthologies of Hope, on Twitter as Anthologies Pod, or email us directly at anthologiesofhope, all one word, no punctuation, @gmail.com. Like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And so we start Season 3 of Anthologies of Hope. I hope this episode does as much for you listening to it as it did for me recording. Fellow listeners, the one, the only, the lovable, the charismatic, the passionate, Joel Frieders. So starting off, the biggest thing that I want to start off with is I'm extremely jealous of your multitasking extraordinaire ability. It seems like every time I see or like hear stuff you're working on, it just kind of like vastly different between all the different things. So how many different things do you tend to juggle on a regular basis with all your interests and or careers and participation there?
That's an interesting question. I've had the extreme case of awesome luck in that my family has been incredibly supportive of the things that I find personal interest in, which we can find the direct correlation to health in general. So my family business is we sell drugs in a street corner. We run a compounding-only pharmacy, which in and of itself is extremely rare. So less than 1% of all the pharmacies in the U.S. are considered compounding. So when you say compounding, that can mean just putting a couple things together, but basically we make everything out of anything. So capsules, creams, liquids, lotions, troches, injections, eye drops, suppositories, you name it. A lot of times I'll end up joking about the fact that we are the suppository repository of the Midwest, but it's true. Like we are part of a dying niche of a specific industry that is overrun with overprescribing of drugs that people have no real identity as far as what's going to happen 20, 30 years down the road. You can't identify some of these problems that are going to be coming up. And a lot of it doesn't necessarily have to do with mental health. It has to do with, you know, personal health. But there's a parallel with anything, because if you're miserable physically, you're probably going to be miserable mentally. But through the compounding pharmacy and working with my family, you know, both my parents are pharmacists and my sister runs the non-sterile lab. I run the sterile lab. I do the website, the e-commerce, and I do a lot of the government interactions. Because of that, I've kind of had the freedom to explore things that are parallel. So I got involved in beekeeping about 9 years ago. We had a small beekeeping company called Aurora Bee Company. We had a small piece of property across the pond from where we have our pharmacy property. And the question from my dad was, what can you do with that? So I started exploring, what can I do with an empty piece of property? And that led me into this company that I formed in 2016 officially with my friend Jeremy called Elemy, which is basically a development company. Originally, that was something where we were going to be taking buildings, either building them from scratch or rehabbing buildings, putting in new tenants and making sure that they went from nothing into something. And we've done that in a few different places where we get an investment group together, we buy an empty property, we rehab it, and we install whether it's a restaurant or any other type of retail business, and we essentially become landlords. Well, that's all fine and dandy, and that's going fine, but that does take forever. Yeah. So it's not something I could I couldn't do that full time. So at the same time, I've been basically using my strengths in communication to help other people through difficult problems, business related. So whether it's moving an entire t-shirt printing company from one building with four stories and a whole bunch of pillars and one bad elevator into a 30,000 square foot facility, or it's helping somebody with their internet marketing, or it's basically just helping someone find a way to make their business exist. That development company kind of turned into or has transformed into both marketing and consulting. So basically, I just help people, and it's more about managing opportunity. Of course, all of that was going along fine. One of my friends, we're going to kind of segue into the suicide prevention stuff, but one of my friends that I used to perform with in Chicago named Mike Malinowski, he completed suicide at the end of July in 2017. So this was, you know, a year and a half or so after my new company had started. I was kind of kicking ass as far as everything was kind of firing on all cylinders. I felt proud of all the work that I was doing. The bees were fine. My health was fine. Everything was great. And it kind of like smacked me across the face with, holy crap, there's people that I know that I'm friends with that I assume everything is fine and they're completely miserable. And that kind of, it changed everything about my direction in life because I knew that I genuinely enjoy communicating with people. I like meeting new people. I like finding out what makes people tick. I like knowing that somebody's having a bad day and being that one interaction that's pleasant. All of those things combined, I wasn't prepared for the impact that his suicide was going to have on my life. So I actually had to write something for another blog this morning, and I had to kind of retell the story in text. And I didn't preface this when I sent the article off, but I didn't reread it because it's painful.
It's painful, and the stream of consciousness tends to be the most accurate as opposed to something that's overly critical and edited.
Absolutely. So rather than kind of filtering it or sifting through it or, you know, fixing any grammatical errors, I specifically sent it off with no editing. Plenty of F-bombs, you know, plenty of curse words because, you know, this stuff sucks. So it's like it's as honest as it can be without me blowing any smoke up its butt because the story itself sucks. But where it's kind of put me since then, I mean, we're fast forward 2 years and a couple months, and my life is 1,000% different. I'm still doing what I did before with the pharmacy. I can't do the bees anymore. I almost died back in April because who knew that a beekeeper could become more allergic to honeybees?
So I saw that online, and that was pretty interesting. So yeah. My wife Amanda is allergic to bees, so that was something I've been cognizant of. But seeing you have the beekeeper keeping the bees, and then the fact that you had a couple run-ins that were near fatal, was definitely interesting to learn of the growing
and it's funny to see that, why did you keep bees if you were allergic? I'm like, dude, I wasn't allergic when I started. I mean, it started with a little raised skin and, you know, it was itchy and then it became more swollen and then I would need steroids and then I got hit with a bald-faced hornet on the temple one day and that was full-on anaphylaxis. Like, I had 3 doses of epinephrine on the way to the hospital. Oh. So, ever since then, I take my shot with me. I was taking Benadryl before I go interact with the bees, but I did 4 years where I was only getting like minor tags. Mm-hmm. It wasn't too bad. But in April, I was installing my hives. Took one to the knee, and my tongue went numb immediately. Mm. My whole face blew up, and then my heart rate went up over 220.
Whew.
So, yeah. So if that's what happens from one to the knee, and they weren't, you know, angry. It was just, it got stuck in the denim on my jeans and pushed itself right through it. And next thing I know, I'm about to die. So I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So thankfully, one of my friends up in Lake Villa was able to pick up the majority of my hives. And then my apprentice, my assistant, my partner in the business, Sebastian, took over 2 hives on the same farm property down in Yorkville. So it was an unexpected exit from that type of business. But on the same token, that actually gives me more time to work on what we're working on here.
Yeah, it's a good forcing function to get out of that and be able to focus on some other things, but it's bad that it takes that type of forcing function to be able to jump ship. So you mentioned like fast forwarding two years and a couple months. So in that time frame, you also became active in local politics?
Actually, I became active in local politics back in 2013.
Okay.
So I was elected alderman in the city of Yorkville, Illinois. The election was in April. I got sworn in May of 2013. And I did that. I got involved in local politics because I moved into a neighborhood in 06. And here it was 2012, and my roads still weren't paved. I was on like my third car. Every time I get a car, I was like, all right, you can either pay to get your alignment fixed and all your other stuff fixed as it pertains to how your car handles, or just go get a new car. And I kept on going, you know what, screw it. I don't want to pay for this repair. So I would just keep rolling my debt forward, which isn't a smart thing to do. But, you know, I'm close to even relatively soon. But I'm like, screw it. I'll just do it myself. So I ran for office, and then I won. I beat a three-term incumbent by 7 votes. And then as I got sworn in, there was this idea that I was just going to come in and flip tables and, you know, be a jerk and whatever. And that was never my intent, but then again, nobody knew who I was.
Yeah.
So their assumption was always going to come in and he's going to raise hell. Well, basically, I was in public. I was as normal as I am, which I don't think I'm necessarily normal, but I was honest. So I would read the packet, ask my questions, give my opinion and vote, and that would be it.
And move on.
But then in private, you know, we're having these discussions about the lawsuit involving my roads and this developer and the bankruptcy of the previous developer and all that stuff. And I had to be patient with the process, not pushing too hard, because if I start yelling and screaming in private, these people are going to think I'm nuts and I'm never going to get my roads done.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can basically do what I always do, which is just enjoy the people around me, befriend those who are befriending to me, trust those who show me trust, and then do my best to just through common conversation to explain how stressful it is to live in a neighborhood with, you know, over 150 houses, but nobody's taking that much pride in their neighborhood because our roads look like hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I pay a boatload of taxes in Kendall County.
I can imagine.
So it's like, this doesn't make any sense. So I ran one, and then it took me 6 years, but I got my roads done last July.
Excellent.
So, yeah. So the year before that, so in 2017 is when Mike completed suicide. And I was, you know, I was into my second term. I was just into my second term. And it completely blindsided me. And I went from that, everything is fine. I can make a difference everywhere, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was living in Candyland, essentially. And then when Mike died, I remember going to the wake And that was off of Cumberland somewhere. But I remember going to the wake, and I couldn't park in the lot because it was full. And then I walked up, and you could see the line around the building. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, and I was seeing people I hadn't seen in 10 years. Because I've been in a couple bands around Chicago in like the indie hip hop scene, so I know a lot of random people, and I bet you I saw 60% of the people I used to hang out with in 2002 to 2006 at this wake, and it was a wake up call because we're all, you know, most of us got kids, you know, we got one or two jobs, most of us have a couple side hustles. I mean, I think my life is defined by side hustle. But in seeing all of these people, you can kind of tell that we're all like, oh, crap. If the guy that we all thought had it all together didn't have it together, and he was that miserable and we didn't do anything about it, like I felt a collective depression based on the fact that none of us stopped it.
So it's interesting you phrase it that way as far as the person that everybody thought had it all together. Obviously, there was something else major going on, and the ultimate end happened. So did you... Were you friends with Johnny before then, or did you, because that is, I mean, almost to a T, the story I've heard Johnny tell about how he got into the movement, how he started Hope for the Day and things like that. So where does your involvement with or awareness of Hope for the Day come in after that? And then is that before or after you starting your proclamation?
So I started my proclamation project the month after Mike passed. It was adopted towards the end of August in 2017. And it's fresh on my mind because, like I said, I just wrote about it. But
so give a little rundown on that since we just jumped right into it.
So I'll actually have to back up a little bit. I graduated college in December of 2002. I bought a house or a townhome in Montgomery, Illinois, and we moved in May of 2003. Yes, I think I'm correct there. Yeah, May of 2003. And in between me graduating and May of 2003, as we're moving into my townhome, my college roommate, Fossil, hung himself in my old bedroom. And because I was going through a large life change, I mean, I just graduated, just moved in with my fiance at the time, had just bought a house. I drove down to Bloomington with one of my roommates, and we were basically quiet the entire way. It wasn't the first suicide of a friend that I had, experienced, mm-hmm. but it's like I almost had so much going on that I wasn't giving it any attention, like mentally. Mm-hmm. So we went down, we did it, and I was fine until I saw him. And then I saw his body in the casket, and I just lost it. And then my roommate said, "Hey, I'm going to stay here. I don't want to go back with you," because he was like not very good at expressing himself, but you could tell that he's just like not comfortable. But he couldn't go with me, so I drove back to Montgomery by myself. This is kind of before people talked on the cell phone.
Yeah,
driving. So I mean, I basically drove home solo, and kind of swallowed it, just put it behind me. And when Mike passed, I was a wreck. So for a good like 2 weeks after Mike's suicide, didn't do much as far as any of the alderman stuff that I'm supposed to be doing. I wasn't reading on stuff. I was just kind of sitting there. Life was kind of passing me by. And the mayor at the time, Gary Galinsky, calls me one night. He goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Nothing." Because that's what I was doing. I was mm-hmm. doing nothing. I was a shell of who I was 2 weeks prior. And he basically said, "You know what, this is a point in your life where you got to make a decision. Like, what are you going to do?" I'm like, "I don't know." He's like, "Well, you can't do nothing." I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "Well, you got to do something. I'll wait." And he did what, Johnny and Carl and Mike and Dave have been driving into me, where it's not that you have to know exactly what to say, but being present, or at least giving the appearance of being present, mm-hmm. is more important than having a counselor at the ready or having a police officer nearby to make sure that you don't hurt yourself. All those things don't mean anything. It's the fact that I needed a human presence that my wife wasn't able to kind of fulfill because she was taking over 100% of the parenting role, mm-hmm. because I was a puddle, man.
Yeah.
I couldn't do anything.
Understandably.
So so when he called, I'm like, "I don't know what I'm going to do." He's like, "Well, you got to do something. I'll wait." And that's what he did. He kind of waited there. So I kind of expanded on my options. I could do nothing, which is what I had been doing for 2 weeks. I didn't feel any better. I could say something in a public meeting, which may or may not make an influence. I could attempt to, like, lobby Springfield to do something. And mm-hmm. at that point, I'm like, I don't even know what the hell I would ask them to do.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's like, "Well, you're a writer. Like, I've been a writer for forever." He's like, you're good with words, and you know a lot of people, so I'm sure you'll figure something out. And at that point, it was August, and I kind of did some research on suicide. I found out that Suicide Prevention Month was September. I'm like, "Hey, this is coming up in a couple weeks. Can I write like a proclamation in support of it?" He's like, "Yeah, do what you got to do. I'll support whatever you write. So I wrote something that had like three key points. Number one, it points out that suicide is a problem. It's an issue. It's something we should be talking about. Number two, as much as we don't like to admit it, there are resources available. Whether or not you know who to call when isn't as important as the fact that they are available. And that the lack of ability to find a resource is basically just a failure on a national PR campaign that we should all be a little bit depressed with. And then the third was is that humanity is important. Like, so you matter, you're enough. So as we were kind of going through this draft, I realized that I could physically point to specific organizations that were making attempts at kind of bridging the gap between the need for resources and the ability to just highlight the fact that they're available. So my mayor, like I said, Gary Galinsky, he adopted the proclamation end of August 2017. And then that night I went home and I emailed every elected official that I knew. And at the end of September, we had 24 cities and three counties in Illinois and the state of Illinois. And then Caton, Georgia and Fort Wayne, Indiana. So we had like 26 cities and three counties and two different states and the state of Illinois. All adopted the same proclamation, saying that suicide is an issue we should be talking about, resources are available, and that you are enough. A handshake or a high can go a long way. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first year, and I kind of just assumed that that would be a kind of a one-and-done thing. But then the next year, I was actually having dinner with Mayor Galinsky. He said, so when are you going to start up again? And I didn't realize it was something I was going to do again. So I said, well, can I start earlier? He goes, yeah, let's do it, you know, middle of April. That'll give you, you know, 4 or 5 months, get your stuff out there. So I set up like my own private station of how do I hit every city and every state all across the country, including every county. And it became more of a logistical nightmare than an actual problem I could solve. Mm-hmm. I still haven't been able to fully contact every community in the country, but I tried. 2018, I sent out like 3,300 emails. And I ended up with 234 cities, 20 different counties, and 40 different states, all adopting a proclamation that says the three things. Suicide is an issue, there are resources available, and that you are enough. And that, you know, a little slice of humanity can go a long way. Just including someone in a conversation, a high five, a hug, or a handshake, whatever. Just alluding to the fact that humanity is just as important as, you know, funding for something.
Yep.
Along the way in 2018, I was reading an article, like I'm a music buff, right? Like just hardcore music, live music fan. I was reading an article about the upcoming Riot Fest, and it was with Mike Venopel from Hope for the Day, and he was making reference to Johnny and like how they came to be. And what struck me was that they looked just like me. If you don't know what I look like, I'm bald. Not that they're bald, but white dude, facial hair, tattoos, black t-shirt, and jeans.
Yep.
That's like my uniform. Like I told myself when I got elected I would never wear a collar in City Hall chambers, and I have kept that promise. I am not a collar wearer. I don't like ties. I went to Catholic school. Screw a collar, screw a tie.
Yes, same here. I walked home one day and saw my entire closet was full of golf shirts or polos, and I was like, yeah, this isn't me. So since then, it's basically been t-shirts and jeans as well.
Yeah, like I'll wear the golf shirt ironically, and people know that I'm wearing something that I'm not comfortable in, but it'll be like a super disgusting like salmon collar. Like,
okay.
God, why are you wearing that? And I just slowly nod. Like, yep. Yes, I'm dressing like you did. but I saw myself and just how they looked. And then how Mike was speaking about suicide so directly and how he was talking about pushing people towards resources as opposed to saying, yes, it's an issue, and then moving on. His topic linked two of my passions, which was one, which was music, which was how I knew Mike Malinowski in the first place, but two, which was just addressing something that's difficult. Like my conversations about my streets, if you talk to anybody before 2016, like, oh, yeah, it's an uphill battle. It's never going to happen. Be happy that you got, you know, gravel roads.
Yeah, what you got.
But then it's like, well, no, like I've already paid for these things. Why don't I have them? It's the ability to confront an issue that is normally difficult or it's too complicated to unpack. And the way that Mike did this in this simple one-page, you know, online interview, I was like, I need to just introduce myself. So I emailed him and said, hi, my name is Joel. I'm a Scorpio. I like long walks on the beach and fluffy white pillows. And I'm an alderman out in Yorkville, and I've been working on something that's oddly similar to what you guys are doing. I just kind of feel alone in this. Which is funny because I started it to kind of create a community,
yeah.
But then I'm the only person sending emails. I mean, my friend Ethan was helping, my friend Jen was helping, but for the most part, my friend Tony was helping. But for the most part, I sent out 3,300 and something emails in 1 year over the course of 5 months, and that took up all of my free time. And as you've kind of already alluded to, I don't have much free time. So I was waking up when I couldn't sleep, which is often, and just going down and Googling. And I found a process, and I stuck with it, and I hit up 3,300 something different cities across the country and counties. And I basically reached out to Hope for the Day saying, I'm lost in this mission. I know that I can't do it alone, but I feel like the people that I've been like supporting, you know, raising money for over the years, they appreciate me raising money for them, but I'm not being included in a way that makes me feel like what I'm doing is valuable.
Is worth it.
And it's weird how you can take something as general and as impactful as suicide prevention and mental health, you know, proactive mental health, and make it so personal. But dude, I spent like 2 years of my life mm-hmm. just straight up hammering away at a keyboard, you know, two different screens, copy paste enter over and over and over and over again. And what I would do is I'd make sure that every email was personal. So I would find their names, spell it correctly. Like it wasn't all...
Put some personalization in the email.
Nothing was automated.
Not just like, a mail merge or anything
There was nothing automated. Every person I sent an email to got an email from me. Like the body of the email might have been one thing, like stock footage basically. But the greeting at the top, like when I emailed Aurora, Colorado, I said, I'm from Aurora, Illinois. You know, like I wanted to be personal.
To that connection.
This stuff is personal, man. Like there's no reason for me to... assume that by automating a process, I'm going to have any better response. Mm-hmm. I have to be human. But then the responses started coming back last year. And I was every time that I got one that punched me in the gut, I would share it with Carl, Mike, Johnny, and Dave. And there's cities all over the country with elected officials that completed suicide. And yet they still have no resources available on their website. They're not talking about what's uncomfortable. The fire chief in the city where I graduated college, he completed suicide in 2016 on duty. So, and then in Chicago last year, we had 7 before July. So it's like... how come all these things are out there? We can see them, but we're not doing anything about it. So as you can tell, I was basically alone in this mission to just talk about something that sucks. And I knew I couldn't do it alone, but like I said, I wasn't getting much support as far as how do I take the next step to become what the universe wants me to mm-hmm. do it or wants me to be without kind of leaning on something. And I saw Mike and I met him in person. And I'm like, dude, this guy is just like me. So he's a musician. He has come face to face with his own mental health challenges. He's addressed them. He continues to address them. And that's why he's one of the strongest people that I know. And what I learned about Hope for the Day real quick is that everybody wants a piece of Johnny, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you meet Johnny, you want to be his friend forever, right? That's a talent. That's a skill that you can't practice.
Yeah, it's inherent it's plus inherent, a charisma. Right?
So it's like everybody kind of runs interference for Johnny because there's people out there that even though this is a mental health and suicide prevention organization, people just want to get a piece of him, you know? And when I discovered that within the first 5 minutes and I was like, that's cool. Like I need people like that in my life.
Well, so the first time I walked into SIP and I didn't know Johnny, like I'd found out about SIP like 2 days before during their opening on Instagram, walked in, sat down, and I was wearing a Troy Lovener arm shirt.
Yeah.
Johnny noticed what it was. We started talking, and we talked for 15 minutes, and at the end of it, it's like, yeah, like I want to be this guy's friend, and let's
change the world together.
Let's do this together.
Exactly. So I met Mike, and I could tell that they were kind of gatekeeping for Johnny, which gave me even more of this, oh, hell yeah. Like, cause I wasn't even aware of Johnny because the article was Mike. Mike talking about his organization. Mike had ownership of Hope for the Day, which, number one, I find completely inspiring and appealing because – when you are a part of it, it's ours, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that led to me, I met Carl. And if you've ever heard Carl speak, your heart literally stops because he's so incredibly captivating and you know there's no way he's pulling out of his ass.
Mm-hmm.
He's the most genuine person, like just like Mike, like in pure genuine.
Genuine, right? And also pulls the nuance out of everything for every piece of conversation. Yes. And you're like, I would have never even thought about that. And there's conversation cafes where he's up there doing an intro or a transition or segue. And I'm like, holy hell, like I've looked at this topic for 2 years and I never thought about that. So yeah,
absolutely. His ability to pull things out, parallels that you never would have thought about, it's almost insulting. Like, you know, there's no reason that you should be that intelligent. I kind of want to punch you in the throat. But it's the good kind of punching in the throat. So then I met Carl and then we were working on things kind of independent of Johnny's involvement at all because it didn't matter about Johnny. It was the fact that I now had people that I could forward emails that were devastating to me. And they would share in that, oh, that sucks. So one of the things I learned about being a good husband is that like men can't fix everything. Mm-hmm. Right? So the easiest way to get, you know, ignored or to piss off your wife is to attempt to fix every problem that they have. And the easiest way to just avoid that for the most part without being a jerk is just saying, man, that sucks. And letting that be enough. Because you're sharing in that, you know, it's empathy.
Yep.
It's
shared grief.
It's not sympathy. It's like, oh, that sucks. And then you offer, is there anything I can do? Is there anything you need me to do? And then when the answer is no, I say, all right, well, you want to talk about this? That in and of itself taught me more about how to be a better husband and a better human than anything else. So by me sharing with them the things that were devastating when I would find out about them was one of the ways I'm like, oh, wow. Well, I was only sharing with Mike and Carl because I hadn't met Dave and Johnny yet. So I remember Mike actually called and said, hey, Johnny wants to meet you. And I'm like, oh, I'm going up to the big leagues. Yeah, and exactly. I was joking about it, but I'm like, oh, that's cool. Because like, if you are aware of music in Chicago and you're aware of festivals and you're aware of how things work, Johnny is not a name that is just somebody who's there. Like, Johnny has actually organized a lot of the stuff that we kind of take for granted now. So I was like, oh, hell yeah, that's going to be awesome. So I remember it was last August. It was hot as balls. And for some reason, I was wearing jeans and a black T-shirt. And we walked around, was it Jefferson Park, whatever it was, right behind SIP?
Logan Square?
It wasn't Logan Square. It was whatever the
park. One of the parks down there.
We were walking around the park, and Johnny, just you could tell he was vetting me. Like, what are you here for? A lot of people are, you know, always trying to find some way to kind of come in and take credit for what they've done. And he wasn't doing it to be brash or to be boastful or to be selfish. He was doing it because he has to. He's got to look out for the entire organization because he's got now a board of directors that basically tells him how his organization and his vision is going to be interpreted throughout the country or across the globe now. So I thought I immediately had respect for the fact that he was looking out for his group, which impressed me. So I told him, hey, I'm just a dude, I'm a husband, I'm a dad, I'm an alderman, and I'm hurting from the loss of my friends, and I don't really know how to go forward because I think that just sending emails is not a good use of my time. And he was incredibly frank, as of course not, it's a huge waste of your time. But, and then he went on to basically say that you started a conversation with people who would not have talked about suicide, would not have given reverence to the mental health resources in their communities, had you not just sent an email. So however small and significant you think that email was, you've done a lot. And he basically empowered me to continue my conversation. And he said, you have the full support of Hope for the Day. So that day, he basically set it up where I was going to have the ability to lean on Hope for the Day for resources. Because like I said, I was working with another organization and I just didn't feel like I was getting anything other than, well, just send them to us. Because that's not how things work. Because not everybody is in one geographic location. Not everything can be virtual. Like every interaction, every contact is nuanced. And I felt that I had a lot more leniency as far as people's options than just, oh, just call this person. Because I never think that's the answer. I'm not going to unload someone on you. I want to be able to give them a Rolodex of people to contact and then be able to follow up with them.
Exactly.
Not here, I hand them off, and then I never have any interaction with them again. So along those same lines, I also got the idea that we all got along, like as friends. And then we started, like I had a foot surgery in November, and it kind of ruined me. It was bad. Mm-hmm. And not only did they reach out to me to see how I was, but like I was telling Johnny how I've basically given up 3 different concerts that I bought tickets for, assuming that I'd be okay after my surgery, and I wasn't. Well, Johnny went out of his way and made sure that I had a place to sit and watch a show at the Metro, and then they would clear out the women's bathroom upstairs for me when I had to go to the bathroom. But he did that because he knew that, number one, music is what's going to heal me. Number two, not being there in front of the stage is going to kill me, and that he's got friends. And that's what friends do. They look out for one another. So that one gesture right there, I was like, oh, okay. So number one, these guys look like me. They talk like me. I mean, we drop F-bombs more than my mom.
Yeah.
not that my mom cusses a lot. I just, you know, I love my mom. But there were all these similarities and parallels. And then when we would have that moment of complete vulnerability and we're talking about the things that suck, and it's like there are so many things that I have in common with them that it's almost ridiculous that I went this long without knowing.
Without it, yeah.
So now that I've been, you know, working with them for over a year, it was actually 364 days after I actually met Johnny in person is when I got an email from myself with my new director name on it.
Okay.
So as of August 15th, 2019, I found out that I am now the public policy director for Hope for the Day. There's a number of projects that we're kind of working on generally, but there's one specifically that I'm working on. I won't make it public until it's actually real. But the idea is to make actual policy improvements based on interpersonal relationships. So as an alderman, I've met people, right, just other elected officials. As a human, not as an alderman, I've met a whole bunch of other people, right? Well, I've noticed that some of the people that I gravitated towards when I first got elected are now much more powerful than they were when I got elected in 2013. And they're people that I have, like, fun relationships with. Mm-hmm. And I don't need anything from them. They don't need anything from me. But it's an actual relationship. That's the humanity I always reference in the proclamation. Well, those people are now going to make sure that we are doing right by the people that need food services throughout the state and the country. So there, it's a start. So I'm basically working on this whole quote-unquote public policy director position. And, you know, it won't take over, you know, my development company or my pharmacy or my other interests, but I'm going to have to kind of squeeze some things out because this has, like, you know, I have a passion for it. Not just because it's important to me because of how much it hurt to lose Fossil and Mike, but through this entire process, I met you.
Mm-hmm.
I met Carl, Mike, Johnny, Dave, Ben, Tony, like Sydney, all of them. Having met all of these people and knowing that we're all kind of fighting the same fight with our own swords, it makes it a lot easier to just kind of understand that I don't have to know what I'm doing tomorrow, but I know what I'm doing today. Today I'm talking to you.
And that kind of pivots to the new question I have for this season to kind of wrap up some of this. We'll do all the plugs before we close up, but how do you know, or how do you feel like when what you're doing is enough?
I don't think you ever do. But I think that's the difference between a school project and a life calling. So when I was having a discussion with my with the new mayor of Yorkville, Mayor Purcell, right after he got elected, I called him and said, hey, and I talked about a couple things that are going on in the city that I have specific opinions about, but I said the real reason I'm calling, outside of the music festival that I've been, you know, helping for the last 8 years, I want to see that continue. But also I've been working on this suicide prevention project, and I'd appreciate it if I could just continue with it. Because I had to get city council approval mm-hmm. to conduct outreach on behalf of the city of Yorkville. And he's like, that's what you wanted to talk to me about? I'm like, that's what's important to me. And he goes, ah, well, you're doing good things. Keep doing what you're doing. And the fact that he's like, that's all you wanted? I'm like, that's all I wanted. Like, that's the most important thing to me.
Right? Yeah.
Outside of my wife and my kids, that's all that really matters is the ability to keep kind of carrying the torch that really sucks to hold. But it's almost like, if not me, then who? It's the same reason I got into beekeeping. If I'm not going to do it, who else is going to? Like, I know that, you know, Hope for the Day has been doing all that they can, but maybe this is how we take Hope for the Day from, you know, impactful to revolutionary. This is how we change the world.
And I like that as taking action, because that's, you know, you never really plug the name of your proclamation and the what it is. So go ahead and give a rundown of what it actually is called.
So the acronym is the NSPAMP, which is the National Suicide Prevention and Action Month Proclamation. It was originally the National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month Proclamation. But we learned, thanks to Hope for the Day, that the word awareness means nothing. So rather than being aware, I asked for action. So it's National Suicide Prevention and Action Month Proclamation. Excuse me. Whenever I say the word awareness, I kind of stumble backwards. But through action, and all that is providing resources to not just your constituents, but your city hall staff and your other elected officials. Because like I said, over the last 2 years, I've had some miserable email exchanges with people basically just saying, yeah, we lost another alderman to suicide. So when you ask for a city to actively search and seek out resource information, you realize how difficult it is. Well, you see what the state of Illinois did last week? They're basically mandating the formation of the Illinois Office of Suicide Prevention. But more importantly, they are also mandating that the Illinois Department of Public Health provide those resources, which means those resources are going to be vetted. You're not going to find Mary Jane's therapy and couch surfing. You're going to find actual organizations that are not only accredited, but are actually doing things. But then to take it one step further, I've got Hope for the Day coming out to Yorkville to talk to our police department on the 10th and 17th of September. We're working on the project with Chicago Police Department. We're making sure that even though we have crisis intervention teams and crisis intervention training all over the country with the police departments, we need to have the specific one-on-one with the organization and the group that needs the training to make sure that they understand that this is all about people. And when you break it down to statistics and you break it down to, you know, demographics, you lose the human aspect of it. And I think that's why Hope for the Day is as impactful as it is now, is because we're talking person to person. And it's like when you watch Carl talk, there's no way you're not going to remember
him. Yep.
So that interaction is what's important.
And putting the names, like you said, using statistics is one thing, but it kind of dehumanizes it, depersonalizes it. But bringing names and stories to that, and in these organizations where it's a fellow officer, a fellow firefighter, a fellow EMT, a fellow public official, those are the names that bring it, and those are the responses that you're hitting or getting the gut check every time you get responses back. And absolutely. So that's where I love the switch to action to make it going forward.
Yeah.
and taking action as opposed to just being aware, because yeah, you can be aware, but it doesn't really change anything. So
like when somebody says suicide awareness, I'm like, I'm pretty aware of what suicide is.
So taking action is a completely different spectrum there. Right. So I love that. So we'll wrap up here, and two of the questions we usually use to wrap up with the first one. What is one thing that you'd want someone to remember from your story?
People are people. So everything sucks once in a while, but people are people, and everybody has the ability to have stuff suck. And it's giving people the benefit of the doubt without giving them, without giving away the farm. But people are people. And even though it's difficult to remember that, the whole you can catch more bees with honey than vinegar, it's not always true. But it's definitely easier to let somebody's baggage be their baggage, but just be present. So being present, I think, is the thing that made me the most comfortable in my own skin after Mike's death.
Excellent. Yeah, the being present in the presence of people tends to be a lot more than always being a lot more. And that's why how you talked of Carl, Johnny, Mike, Dave, everybody here, that's the same thing. When you're here, when you're working with them, it is a presence and they are present in that conversation and the action together. So that ends up helping a long way too.
Absolutely.
So the past couple of seasons we've had playlists that we've added to every week on Spotify. So if there's one or two songs that you'd want to add to the playlist in the aspect of mental health, things that are in your journey, obviously we've talked about how big music was to you. So this may be a difficult one.
This is a good one. Okay. So there's a band called Gang of Youths.
Mm-hmm.
They're from New Zealand. The lead singer's name is Dave. He looks like a brunette, taller Heath Ledger.
Okay.
He could actually end up being my hall pass. Dude's hot. So they have a album that's like 2 years old, I think, called Go Further in Lightness. There's a song called Do Not Let Your Spirit Wane. I actually have three lines from the chorus tattooed on my chest backwards so that every morning when I get out of the shower, I can look myself in the eye and say, do not let these things you got go to waste. Do not let your heart be dismayed. Do not let your spirit wane. So, like, I listened to that song 1,000 times after Mike died. And it was a gift from my friend Tom Dozois, basically saying, hey, check out this album. And I didn't totally get it until there's, like, an interlude before the song that is a piano and violin version of Sweet Child of Mine.
Okay.
And it sounds, like, almost out of place, but then you're comfortable.
And then it hit you with the song
starts, and it's like, oh God! And it's an interesting story about what the lyrics are. Like, it's this guy who's basically with a girl who has a kid. His life is incredibly plain. He's getting drunk in his basement one day, gets a call from the ICU, and he has to go ID their bodies because they got hit by a car. And it's devastating. But that chorus, like, holy shit! Like, it's impactful to the point where it was all I listened to in the months after Mike's death. And it's still, like, when I head to my next meeting, that's what I'll probably be bumping, because it's gorgeous, it's reverent, it's powerful. I've seen them in concert twice in Chicago, Sub T, and then over at the Metro, like I said.
Okay.
They're incredible. And seeing them on a stage that I also played, at Sub T, and then seeing them play the Metro, which is still on my bucket list, it's like, okay, their next step is they're going to be selling out United Center. But that song has been on my chest since I think I had it tattooed last October. The song is important to me. So Do Not Let Your Spirit Wane is probably one of the best songs I've ever heard in my life. And I'm glad that it's tattooed poorly on my chest.
Excellent. Yeah, that'll be one I definitely check out. And I love that. And there's been a handful of songs I've had similar experiences with between both family members and friends losing them to suicide. And there have been some where it's just been, that's the song that I listen to on repeat. On end.
Yep.
And then every time, like, I'm in a similar place. It's like sometimes, with the advent of streaming, there's songs that, or you can listen to so much music, but there's a handful that I always go back to. And it's those that kind of center me and bring me back and kind of not have me lose purpose and just give me context to kind of stay local and stay active.
Yeah. Then there's an instrumental track. There's two instrumental tracks that I always fall back on. So there's a guy from, I think it's Columbus or Cincinnati, Ohio. His name is Fat John, the Ample Soul Physician, but he goes by Fat John. He's got an instrumental track called Talk to Me that is like, if you've ever been around live music and you've ever seen a drummer playing drums, you know what the pocket is, right?
Mm-hmm.
This drum riff is so comfortably in the pocket, but it's such a reverent, beautiful song. It's only got the three words Talk to Me in it, kind of sprinkled throughout. But the, like, just the pocket drums kind of just beautiful, right? And then one of my friends named Marco is actually a pretty accomplished producer. His stage name is Maker, M-A-K-E-R. And he released an album, I want to say 2001, called Shooting the Breeze on a record label in Chicago called Galapagos 4. Now, this is going to sound completely self-serving, but my guitar is on the album. But there's a song on the album called Train Till Nowhere. And it's kind of the same thing where it's that cadence, it's that beat, it's that rhythm. But he starts the song with a train leaving a station. So it's that, and it's the chugga, chugga, chugga that kind of comes along. And this was the first time, and I remember the first time I ever heard it. We were on the way to Scribble Jam in Cincinnati, Ohio in like 2000 or 2001, whatever. But we're driving there, and he puts on this song, and then I heard my guitar. So he had taken something that I had recorded on something else, found out where else it would work, and then didn't tell me that I was about to listen to myself. And I literally pooped my pants. Like, what is that? Is that me?
Yeah, your head explodes.
And it's still at like 3 minutes and 11 seconds when my guitar comes in. I literally, like, my whole body gets chills because it's the beat is so just incredibly comfortable and calming. But then when the solo comes in, it's, I mean, it was horribly recorded because I didn't have very good equipment, but it's gorgeous. So that's one of the things that whenever I'm talking about songs that are important to you, Train Till Nowhere from Maker off of Shooting the Breeze. Comfortable as hell beat, but oh, it's got a lot more meaning to me now that I've kind of used it as a way to kind of calm down for the last decade or so.
Awesome. Yeah, those are some three good ones, and I'll definitely like to check those out. And if we can't find them online, I'll hit you up to to get at least the last one if it's more local than not. So thanks for the time. Was there anything else you wanted to cover while we were here?
No. If you need something, let me know. My email is joel@hftd.org.
Excellent.
Up.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.